I want you to do something for me. Just close your eyes and picture the start of a war, a real regime-changing, history-altering conflict. What does that movie inside your head actually look like?
I think for most of us, that movie is probably directed by Michael Bay. It's, it's cinematic. It's
Absolutely.
some missiles streaking across the sky at dawn. It's those breaking news interruptions with the big red banners.
It's loud. It's a very loud, unmistakable bang, the Pearl Harbor moment.
Precisely. The moment where, without a shadow of a doubt, the world just changed. You know who the enemy is, and you know the fight has started.
So I've been spending the last few days just buried in this stack of documents about the Taiwan Strait, specifically looking at this concept called gray zone cognitive warfare. And the most unsettling thing I found isn't about the missiles. It's that the movie in our heads is completely wrong.
It's totally outdated. I mean, we are preparing for a war of hardware while the opponent is waging a war of the mind.
And according to these sources, and we're looking at a report here called The First Battlefield and a strategy piece from February 2026 titled, "The First Shot Doesn't Whistle Through the Air," "The War Doesn't Start with a Bang,"
No.
"It Starts with a Budget Fight," or a rumor on social media, or a routine drill that just happens to go on a little too long.
It's a terrifying premise because it targets our blind spots.
Yeah.
We're looking at a fundamental shift in how the People's Republic of China, and specifically the PLA, views the entire battlefield.
So the mission for us today, for this deep dive, is to really unpack that shift. We need to get our heads around how they are targeting the cognitive domain.
Which is really just a fancy way of saying they are targeting your brain. They're
Right.
targeting your ability to decide. The target isn't the airfield. It's the decision-making cycle of the opponent.
Yeah.
If you're waiting for missiles to fly to realize you're at war, you have likely already lost.
That's the core thesis here, isn't it? The first battlefield. It's not a piece of land. It's not a beachhead.
No. The first battlefield is certainty. The aggressor, and in this case, the analysis is all about Beijing strategy, wants to destroy the defender's certainty about what is happening.
To create a slow realization.
A slow realization that arrives too late. By the time you look up from your coffee and say, oh, wait, this is actually an invasion, the operational tempo has already shifted. You're just paralyzed.
Okay, let's get specific because cognitive warfare can sound so abstract, like something out of a sci-fi novel.
They can, yeah.
But the sources give us this really granular case study that I found incredibly helpful to visualize this. They pinpoint a specific date, February 5, 2026.
Right. This is from the Strategic Resilience Group report. It's a hypothetical scenario, sure, but it's built on a very real doctrine and tactics that we are seeing evolve right now.
So set the scene for us. It's a Tuesday in Taiwan. What does this day look like to the average person on the street?
On the surface, it looks completely normal, boring even.
Hmm.
You have Taiwan's president, Lai Ching-te, doing a standard photo op.
Nothing unusual.
He's visiting textile merchants in a market, shaking hands, eating street food. He's telling reporters that relations with the U.S. are rock solid.
He's not in a bunker. He's,
Right.
like you said, checking fabric swatches.
Right. He is projecting total normalcy. But then you layer on the second event. At the exact same time, there's a phone call happening between former U.S. President Trump and President Xi Jinping.
And looking at the notes in the source, she is urging caution on arms sales.
Yes. But notice the tone. It's not a threat of war. It's just diplomatic pressure. It feels tense, sure, but it's within the realm of standard geopolitics.
Doesn't scream emergency.
No, it's just another Tuesday in international relations.
And then we have the third layer, which I think is the most insidious because it feels so local. Inside Taiwan's own legislature, there is a massive fight breaking out. The opposition is blocking key elements of the defense budget.
And that's the key. To a casual news consumer, those are three separate stories. You have a local business story, a high-level diplomatic call, and a domestic political squabble.
You just scroll past all three on your phone without connecting them.
But the sources say this specific combination is the opening move. It's a coordinated strike.
How so?
Beijing watches for that domestic friction, the budget fight, and they exploit it. They don't need to create the division. They just need to time their external pressure, the Xi call, to hit exactly when internal division is highest. The sources call this finding seams for coercion.
That's such a powerful image. They aren't creating the crack in the wall, they're waiting for it to appear and then just jamming a crowbar in it.
Precisely. And it uses the target's own democratic processes against them. A budget debate is healthy in a democracy.
Of course.
But in this context, Beijing turns that healthy debate into a weapon of paralysis. While the politicians are screaming at each other about funding, readiness stalls.
This leads us to a really important distinction the sources make about deception. I think in the West, when we hear military deception, we think of like inflatable tanks.
Yeah, World War II stuff.
Fooling the Nazis about where D-Day is landing. We think of it as a trick.
We view it as a tactical gadget, a one-off. Hey, look over there while I go over here.
But the analysis from the RAND Corporation and the U.S. Naval War College here says we are getting that completely wrong when it comes to the PLA.
We are. For the PLA, deception isn't a trick. It is a system. It is an operational step that is baked into the entire process. The RAND analysis is very clear. They expect to generate advantage through surprise and information dominance.
It's not an extra.
No, it's the flower in the cake.
And the Naval War College report, hashtag 50, uses this phrase, institutionalized surprise. That feels like an oxymoron. How do you make surprise routine?
Well, you stop being alarmed. And that's the real goal. You do it through something called exercise cover. This is one of the most dangerous parts of the gray zone.
So you hide an invasion force, not in the dark, but in plain sight, just by calling it a drill.
Exactly. This is the concept of normalizing presence. Think about the psychology of the defender. If the PLA runs a large-scale naval drill every single month, if they send patrols across the center line every Tuesday, what happens to you?
You stop reacting, it becomes background noise. You can't scramble the jets every single time, right? You'd burn out your pilots and your budget.
Exactly. You get desensitized. The sources call this mapping the defender's patterns. They do these drills to see exactly how long it takes you to react. And eventually, they compress your warning time because you hesitate. You don't want to sound the alarm for the 100th time.
It's the boy who cried wolf, but the wolf is the one crying.
And the wolf is taking notes on how fast the villagers run. The trick is that these tightly scripted activities are framed as routine to justify moving massive amounts of troops. Oh, don't worry about those 50,000 troops. They're just here for the spring exercise.
And there's another layer to this scripted activity that I found fascinating, especially looking at the context of January 2026 and the internal politics of the PLA.
You're talking about the purges.
Right. The sources mention these significant leadership purges, anti-corruption drives. My first thought was, well, that's good for the defender, right? Chaos in the ranks.
You'd think so, but not necessarily. And this is where the expert analysis really shines. It suggests that when leadership trust is stressed, when Xi Jinping is purging his generals, that scripted activity becomes even more attractive to Beijing.
Why is that? You'd think they'd want to lay low.
Because if you don't fully trust your commanders, you want them following a strict script. You want total control, no improvisation. So running these massive, tightly scripted drills serves a dual purpose. It masks internal problems by keeping everyone busy and monitored while simultaneously testing the enemy's reactions.
It turns internal weakness into external pressure.
That is wildly efficient in a very scary way.
But it's not just the military hardware. The sources talk about the logistics of uncertainty. This was the part that really made me look at the ocean differently.
Dual use logistics. This is a cornerstone of the strategy.
Okay, break that down for the listener.
Okay, imagine you are a radar operator in Taiwan. If you see a gray hull with a giant number on the side and a cannon on the front, your brain says warship.
Right. Simple.
You know what that is. You know the rules. But what if you see a fishing fleet? What if you see a commercial ferry?
The sources mention using civilian infrastructure to obscure military posturing.
Exactly. If a commercial ferry is booked to transport supplies, is it carrying food for a supermarket or ammunition for a beachhead? If a fishing fleet surges into a specific area, are they chasing tuna or providing a radar screen for amphibious craft?
And if you are that radar operator, you can't just blow up a fishing boat because you suspect something.
You can't. And that creates strategic ambiguity. The defender freezes. They're stuck in a meeting debating whether the activity is civilian or military. Do we escalate? Is this an act of war? Or are we about to sink a boat full of fishermen?
And while they're debating,
the attacker is gaining time. Every hour the defender spends arguing is an hour the attacker gains in position.
It exploits our desire to be rational. No one wants to be the person who starts World War III over a misunderstanding with a ferry.
That hesitation is the weapon. They are banking on your rationality.
So we have the physical deception, the drills, the boats. But there is a whole other machine running alongside this. The sources call it narrative synchronization.
This is the force multiplier. You can have all the ships in the world, but if you can't control the story, you lose.
It seems like this starts at home for them. The sources point to a speech by Xi Jinping in January 2026 at the 20th CCDI, that's the Central Commission for Discipline Inspection.
Anti-corruption body, yeah.
Yeah.
Xi called for full and rigorous party self-governance. Now, usually when we see that in the West, we interpret it as internal housekeeping. You know, okay, more bureaucracy, more crackdowns.
But the sources say we should read it as a military preparation.
It is an operational enabler.
Mm-hmm.
By locking down the party apparatus, you prevent leaks. You ensure that the message coming out of Beijing is completely terrifyingly unified.
No dissent, no conflicting signals.
So when they speak with one voice.
And how is that voice used against the target?
It's used to sow distrust. The sources are very clear on this. They use this unified narrative to question the reliability of alliances. They will pump out messaging that asks the Taiwanese people, can you really trust the Americans? Are they really going to show up? Look at their own political chaos.
And they reframe the situation entirely. I saw that they frame the defenders' deterrence, like buying defensive weapons, as provocations.
Right, it's geopolitical gaslighting. We're only doing this drill because you bought those missiles. Conversely, they frame China's own threats as prudence or responsibility. They flip the script so the victim feels like the instigator.
The sources say the ultimate goal isn't just to trick people, but to make persuasion feel like inevitability.
That is the key word, inevitability. If the target feels isolated and they feel internally divided by their own politics, and they see this massive unified force across the water, the hope is they just concede.
They give up before the shooting even starts.
Resistance is futile.
This brings us back to the domestic front, which we touched on with the budget fight. The sources are pretty explicit that Beijing is actively interfering in domestic politics.
Yes. The AEI January update that's referenced mentions that they are cultivating influence networks. And it's not just about picking a favorite candidate.
It's more sophisticated.
Much more. It's about exploiting friction. It's about cultivating relationships with military personnel, with young political figures across the entire spectrum.
The sources call this pre-positioning leverage.
Think of it like pre-positioning supplies. You store ammo near the front line so they're there when you need it. Well, here, they are pre-positioning relationships, incentives, and intimidation.
So when the crisis hits, you have people on the inside who can be leveraged.
Exactly. If you can get a key legislator to hesitate for 24 hours or a military officer to second guess an order, you have successfully attacked the cognitive domain. You've slowed down their decision cycle just enough to win.
It just feels so overwhelming. How do you even fight something that looks like normal life? If the enemy is using routine commerce and politics as camouflage, how do you stop it?
That is the pivot point.
Yeah.
And the sources, thankfully, don't just leave us with the doom and gloom. They do offer a way forward, but it requires a massive shift in how we look at the world.
You have to look for the signal, not the noise.
Exactly. The Strategic Resilience Group source lists some specific countermeasures. They call them hard-to-fake indicators.
Okay, what does that mean?
Right. Narratives are easy to fake. You can say whatever you want on social media. But physics. Physics is hard to fake.
What's an example of a physical reality they can't hide?
Civilian sea lift patterns. You can hide a lot. But if you are preparing for a massive invasion, you need to move a massive amount of fuel, food, and medical supplies. That creates anomalies in logistics data that are extremely hard to scrub.
So follow the gas.
Follow the gas. Follow the blood supplies. Follow the exercise quarters. If a military exercise zone just happens to align perfectly with a logistics hub, that's a big red flag.
That's not a narrative, that's geography.
Right, or abrupt changes in communications discipline.
Mm-hmm.
If a unit that usually chats all day suddenly goes silent or switches to a new encryption pattern, that is a hard indicator. If the radios go silent, something is happening.
So better surveillance, but looking for those cracks in the facade. What about the political side? How do you inoculate a democracy against the budget fight weapon? That seems like the hardest part.
It is the hardest part. The sources suggest a cross-party baseline. This is crucial for any democracy facing this kind of threat.
And what does that look like in practice?
It means political parties need to agree on certain red lines on readiness. You can fight about taxes, you can fight about healthcare, fine. But you cannot use defense readiness as a bargaining chip.
So no holding the defense budget hostage to get your way on a different issue?
Exactly. If Beijing sees that the defense budget is off limits for political games, they lose a major seam for coercion. You take the weapon out of their hands by agreeing not to fight about survival.
And finally, there's narrative defense.
They argue that speed of rebuttal is operational.
Meaning you can't wait for the press release the next day?
You can't wait an hour. If a rumor starts, The Americans are abandoning us, and you wait 24 hours to correct it, the damage is done. The uncertainty has already set in. You have to kill the false narrative immediately.
You have to treat information warfare with the same urgency as incoming missiles.
It really changes the definition of readiness, doesn't it? It's not just having the tanks fueled up, it's having the truth fueled up.
So let's bring this all together. We started by saying the first shot isn't a bang.
No. The first shot is a slow realization. It's a drill notice, a rumor, a budget fight. These are the components of the gray zone.
And the so what for our listener? Why does this matter to someone who might not be a military strategist?
It matters because the battle is over certainty. Whether you're a business leader making investment decisions, a voter deciding who to trust, or just an observer, you have to understand that the timeline of war has changed. If the defender is still arguing about what is happening, they have already lost the initiative.
The war is effectively over before the shooting even begins.
That is a sobering thought. The idea that you can lose a war without a single shot being fired in anger.
It's the ultimate goal of Sun Tzu, isn't it? To subdue the enemy without fighting. This is just the modern, high-tech application of that ancient principle.
We have to learn to see the invisible front.
I want to leave everyone with a final thought that really stuck with me from these documents. We are all conditioned by history to look for a Pearl Harbor moment, that unmistakable signal. But in the age of cognitive warfare, looking for Pearl Harbor might be the fatal mistake. The sources suggest the most dangerous weapon isn't a missile. It's the manufactured belief that resistance is futile.
Or the belief that resistance isn't even necessary yet.
Exactly. The question isn't, will we win the war? The question we need to be asking is, would we even recognize that the war had started until it was already over?
That is the question.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. It's heavy stuff, but understanding it is the first step to seeing through the fog.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening. We'll see you on the next one.